This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is Tuesday, May 17th, 1994. I'm in the Red Gym with Amy Kittleson, and Amy is graduating this weekend.
Yes.
And on Saturday. And I interviewed Amy at the end of her freshman year in the spring of 1990. So this is a follow-up interview, and we're going to talk about those four intervening years that I suspect passed rather quickly. Let's start out with your course of study, with what you ended up studying here at the university. Did you have any major or anything like that in mind when you enrolled at the university?
Well, when I first enrolled, when I was a freshman, I had intended to be a communication arts major and go into journalism because I had a friend of the family who was a traveling editor into journalism, and so he sort of influenced me in that. But then once I got here, well, my first few years, of course, you're concentrating on breadth requirements, and so you sort of don't get into any particular area right away. Mm-hmm. So I was concentrating on those. And then I got interested in just so many other things, just the variety of classes offered. So I took anthropology for a while, which was very foreign to me, coming in from Menominee, Wisconsin, of course. So that was really interesting, and so I picked up some anthropology classes, and journalism went on the wayside, and I never actually went back to it. But
did you take a cultural anthropology or a physical anthropology?
Yeah, cultural anthropology was what I wanted to focus in, and the reason why I didn't follow through with anthropology then was because I wasn't very interested in the sciences of it, and the archaeology and the as more interested in the cultural anthropology, but I had to go through all of the sciences and stuff, and so I decided that, I finally ended up with English then.
What brought the English, how did the English come into play on this, English major?
Well, I've sort of been doing it all along. I wanted to work on my writing skills, of course, my journalism first interest, and so I'd been taking the requirements from the English major all along, and then just decided that I could graduate actually a semester earlier if I were to focus just on English. I declared just last semester, so my senior year I declared my major. No. So, you know, these things take time to get just what you want. And
what areas within English did you enjoy studying?
Well,
literature, is it divided into like literature and writing, or is it all together? Or
I suppose there's different areas that you can focus on. I didn't actually have a focus just because I declared it so late that I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. And I just knew that I wanted to work on writing in particular as a skill, sort of coming out with a skill of some sort. And so I took a creative writing class, one of them that was really enjoyable, but then I also took the literature classes that I liked were more the contemporary, like this past semester I have a contemporary poetry class that I particularly like. It's really interesting. I had a 19th century women writers course that I really enjoyed. It was good to get away from the canon sort of, which they focus on a lot of the male writers and things like that. Which, of course, they're fascinating and interesting. 17th century Donne and things like that that I have just this past semester, so that's sort of in my mind. But I really liked getting away from sort of the traditional path. And so I'm more interested in what current writing is now.
What kind of, tell me some of the writers in the 19th century women's course that you read that you really enjoyed.
Well, I really liked Margaret Fuller. It was one of my favorite. My professor for that class was Steele, Professor Steele, and that was his, his specialty was Margaret Fuller, so of course we got a lot of that in the class, which I'm glad, though, because she's just an amazing woman. And Louisa May Alcott is another one. We didn't read Little Women.
You didn't read Little Women, oh my goodness.
No, we read Alternative Alcott.
So you read Alternative Alcott.
Yeah. I think I'd read Little Women when I was a little woman myself. But I was glad to get into some other things. And some other obscure writers that I never would have thought of reading had I not taken these classes, like Catherine Maria Sedgwick. Just names that I would never have heard of, but they're just as good a writer as anyone else that you might think of, that might come to mind when you think of, you know, English literature.
19th century. So it was American 19th century.
American women writers, yeah.
Of course, with Alcott.
Yeah, right.
Did you read Harriet Beecher Stowe?
No, we didn't. No. But we read some other African-American writers. Slave narrative. Her mind is escaping me right now.
That's okay.
We read, Harriet Wilson. That's what I read. And Our Meg. So we covered that sort of area, but he deliberately skipped over Harriet Beecher Stowe because he figured that most of us got
Had read, and really Uncle Tom's Cabin is the one major book that she did, So. Well, I thought you had something specific you were looking at. I want to go a few more English things here. What about professors? You mentioned Steele. Who are some of the other professors, both in English? Let's start with English and then work back to anthropology in your two sort of major, almost co-major areas of expertise of disciplines.
I would like to declare anthropology my minor, only the university doesn't offer that. They don't offer a minor area of study, it's just you major, go the whole nine yards, or you can't call it anything.
Really?
Yeah, they have certificate programs, which I also have a certificate in the ILS department, which is kind of a major.
Yeah.
But I've taken just as many credits in the anthropology department that basically any other university in the state would probably call a minor, but since we don't have that title here, then I can't really say that, but I have an advisor who says, go ahead and say you have a concentration.
I wasn't aware that you couldn't get a minor in something. Yeah, because when I went to college, I had an English major like you and an anthropology minor.
Uh-huh.
And probably about the same kind of courses you had.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate that you can't have that
designation. It is.
Well, let's go to the professors now.
Yeah, the professors. So in the English department, the ones I had that stuck out were, of course, Steele. He's very energetic and just fun to be in a classroom with and very motivational. And Heather Dubrow, is also the same way. I have her for a 17th century English literature class right now. And she likes to get to know all of her students by the first, actually, 2 weeks of class. She brought in a pair of socks that she bundled up and she would throw them at us, and we would say our name, and something that began with the first letter of our name, and we did this for about 2 weeks. Everyone would get to know each other, so she was really into, you know, getting the class.
The interpersonal aspects of it,
So discussion facilitating and stuff like that, so she's really fun. And, let's see, I also have on here Feldskog, which I had for Voices of American Humor. And he's the same way. This was a bigger class, not so much a discussion, a big lecture. So I didn't actually get to know him very well, but he was a very, just a good speaker, lecturer, very energetic. And that's really what I like to see in a lecture, of course, you know, keeps the classes.
And I would assume, since he's teaching American humor, there would be some humorous incidents as well.
You'd be surprised how seriously he takes the class, you expect, you know, barrels a little bit. It's, you know, it shows the academic side of it. So. But, and Professor Kimbrough, I had down here. I had him for a Shakespeare class my sophomore year, I think. And he's retired now. I had him his last semester going out. But he was just really unusual and a lot of fun. At the end of the semester, then we got to perform one of the plays. We performed The Tempest in the Union Play Circle, and so that was my acting debut. Here.
Oh, you did? What role did you play?
I was Ariel.
Oh, yes, that's a nice role.
Light of Spirit, so.
So you did that, did you do a reading? Is that what you did? Did you actually memorize the lines?
Oh, we memorized, yeah.
Oh, my.
Just certain, you know, everyone, different groups in the class would memorize a certain section of the play, and then we'd. So different people would be the same character.
Yeah.
And, you know, just
that's very interesting.
Kind of a final grade.
Can you still say the first few lines of Ariel's speech?
No, I can't remember it at all. It was about 3 years ago. But...
Well, one of these days you'll wake up, or one of these nights you'll wake up and it'll all just come back to your head.
Yeah, there were only about 15 lines to it. Actually, while I was up there, I didn't even remember them. I was expecting to remember them 3 years later. But, yeah.
What about Anthro?
Okay, and then in the anthropology department, I had didn't really have a focus in anthropology either. I sort of went all over the board sampling things. I started out with African peoples, which Hutchinson was a good professor there. And then I got into Native American studies I was more interested in, you know, bringing it closer to home. And so I had Nabokov, which is his specialty, sort of Southwestern Native American, a lot of the Zuni, Hopi tribe. So then I was interested in that area, so then I took this anthropology of law course, which is interesting. I wanted to learn how to apply the philosophy of anthropology, you know, getting into something more occupational oriented maybe than just for it being a hobby. And so I took that from Professor Harvey. Art and anthropology was an interesting class. I can't remember the professor's name right now, but his specialty was in ancient Mexico. And so they took you all over the board. It's interesting. I had a Japanese professor too. It's interesting to just having the professors, you know, they're coming from all these different backgrounds and where they've been. So just in general, I guess I don't have any that really stick out in my mind, but, and maybe that's why I didn't stick with them.
Yeah, but the experience itself was pleasant, sounds like.
Definitely.
Yeah, there was a wide variety, but no one who really...
I guess not. I guess nothing really pulled me in enough to stay. I guess that's why maybe I didn't follow through with it, too.
That's understandable. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's certainly, and that is a reason a lot of people will go into different fields. There'll be that one professor who makes that difference.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Now, a couple questions. First of all, we talked about, you said that your American humor was a large class and your others, some that you mentioned, were smaller. What about the whole question of class size and university size? Were you able to get to know some of your professors here at the university? Was the large size of the classes in the university a real hindrance, or wasn't it?
For me personally, it was a bit of a hindrance, kind of intimidating, just not really feeling, having a connection with your professor, unless you're in a small discussion. So when I would have them for the big lectures, I guess that would be my own doing, but I wouldn't take the time to really get to know them. It's kind of hard. You know, I would say that's one of the big drawbacks of going to the university here, is just not having the intimate relationships with your professors that you obviously had at a smaller university. But a lot of them they know that, they realize that it's difficult for students to, and they really encourage you to, like Dubrov, for instance, very friendly and available, and, you know, some other professors that I...
So office hours are truly that, you don't feel intimidated going to the office
hours? I've gone into several office hours, and they, you know, they really try to help you out if you make the move to go in. But it's difficult,
Let's move to the anthropology department for a second. Just very recently, a report very critical of the anthropology department came out. I don't know if you were aware of that report or saw the results in the newspaper. The Wisconsin State Journal, I quote this in the format I sent to you, stated that the department this is a quote from the report: "The faculty of UW-Madison's Department of Anthropology is so racked by personality conflicts, empire building, and sexual harassment that has become mired in academic gridlock." Were you aware of any of this, or was this an issue at all among the students who were taking anthro courses that you know?
See, no, I really didn't get that feeling when I was in the department, and I was actually kind of surprised to see the report. But then again, like I said, I wasn't all that involved, I don't think, within everything. But as far as the personality conflicts and things, the way I would see it is just that it seems like that's inevitable. It wouldn't be uncommon mm-hmm. anywhere in any department mm-hmm. you have mm-hmm. personality complex. But I really didn't notice it while I was there, I have to say, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. Know, that's why I'm asking you if it had, that's why I'm curious. Had it filtered down to the student level?
I really don't think that it was all that common, or common knowledge that this was going on.
Okay.
Gridlock. Yeah. Really
you didn't sense that in your classes or anything like
that. Just being oblivious.
No, I don't think so.
And just the students that I know, we never really talked about that.
Okay. So it was a surprise when you saw that report.
Yeah. I was surprised. I saw it, and I was actually contacted Harold Choi Brand,
he's the African storytelling professor who did the report. Yeah.
Right. But I know that they directly went to the students.
Oh, well, let's talk about that for a second.
Well, I didn't actually talk to him because... Yeah.
Okay, interrupted there. You said that some of your fellow students had been contacted by the
report. Yeah, I know that they went directly to the students to put this report together, mm-hmm. so maybe some of the students did say that. But I didn't actually talk to him because this was at the time that I was just canceling my major.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I wasn't the right person to talk to.
That's right. Oh, did he contact you?
He did. He called my house, left a message, but I wasn't there.
Okay.
I never got a chance to talk to him. I would have given them a favorable, you know, because I was really satisfied with my experience in the anthropology department. So. Mm-hmm.
Moving to English for just a second, I've read articles over the years about the politically correct, quote-unquote, nature of the English department
mm-hmm.
In terms of the curriculum and so forth. In your experience, has that been an issue, or has that been your experience in the classes, for example?
I guess maybe what I was talking about before as far as the emphasis that they put on the canon and the requirements mm-hmm. that they have. I have a roommate who is a women's studies major. He's a male. He's also an English major.
Mm.
And he took a class that was the emphasis or the focus of study was 17th century women writers or something like mm-hmm. that. And he wanted to count that one of the requirements that was pre-1800 literature.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the department wouldn't let him count that because it didn't have big names in it or something. Mm. Too much emphasis on not things that might help you in the GRE
mm-hmm.
or something
like
that, you see. So that's one instance that I encountered.
So that's kind of the opposite, though, aren't they? Isn't the English department saying that you're not taking enough of the established canon?
Right.
Yeah. So that would be what I had been reading is that they have sort of a politically correct agenda and curriculum in the English department.
Oh, right. I guess this would be the opposite.
Yeah, so that would be the opposite, which is interesting, too. I mean, that's very interesting as well. No, maybe I didn't make the question clear.
Oh, but I guess, from what you were saying to address your question, I was just going to say that... they do offer a lot of, say, multicultural mm-hmm. literature and women writers and stuff, you know, things that I've taken. And I was signed up for a class this past semester that was a multicultural women's autobiography class. So I do think that they cover a lot
mm-hmm.
of,
mm-hmm.
I guess, political correct.
Well, I don't know.
Subject matter.
I'm trying to think of a term. Politically correct is the one I came up with.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you think there's a fairly good balance between the traditional canon and the this new type of curriculum?
I think there's a lot of variety that you can select from. So if you choose to not want to go that way, canon, traditional, then I think there's a lot of options offered in the department, mm-hmm. a lot of different classes. So I think it's
okay.
Good.
Great. Let's talk about your study habits for a minute.
Okay.
When you gave an interview 4 years ago, you said this. Next year will be easier with experience, and you had problems your first year with, quote, poor study habits, procrastination, and time management. And you were going to work on those in your next year. Did you work on those, and are those problems any longer?
Well, I really think that you do learn how to handle them better just the more that you do it. So
mm-hmm.
I think I've gotten better. I'm sure some of those habits still stay with me. But you learn how serious they can be, you know,
yeah.
the more important. Get down the road, so I think think I've been able to handle myself a lot better. I haven't pulled any all-nighters.
You haven't, though. So, yeah.
Got rid of that habit, but it just comes with experience and knowing what you have to do.
Do you feel like really on top of your classes now? You know how to study for them? And
Really think so. I think you learn to take it. It's less, maybe this is just me personally, but you don't get so absorbed in. I used to be so concerned and so worried about doing everything right or getting understanding. But then after a while, you learn to just take it with a little lighter attitude, maybe. And if you're relaxed, then you'd be surprised how you still can do okay.
It's not the end of the world,
in other words. No, it's not the end of the world. That's exactly it. You know, you realize that school just isn't as major a concern as it used to be, I guess, my freshman, sophomore year.
You still like essay exams?
Did I say
you said you preferred essay to multiple choice in your freshman year, which is not all that common.
Yes, I definitely still do. I still have not mastered the multiple choice. I just took that yesterday in my class, but I don't like them at all, multiple choice stuff. I like essay exams. Whereas I like writing, as my English major, so.
Great. Let's move from courses. Oh, finally, how would you rate the quality of instruction that you received here in your undergraduate years?
I really think it's excellent. I think that UW has an excellent reputation. The professors are amazing, and I'm just mesmerized by them, you know, and it's wonderful.
That's great.
Top notch.
Let's talk about financing and education. This has been in the news a lot lately, you know, the cost of education, student loans, things like that. How has your education been financed, essentially?
Essentially by financial aid loans, which I've been paying for quite a while. Work study, you know, I've been working ever since I've been in school, every semester.
How many hours do you work a semester, generally?
Oh, generally, about 15 hours a week, I'd say. So not all that much, really.
That's enough.
That's enough. Yeah.
So most of your money has come from loans and from work study. Have you had any scholarships? Or
no.
Do you receive help from home on your tuition?
Not very much. My sister is also in college. She's just a year older than I am, so throughout, my mother was basically supporting two of us going through college, so she couldn't actually contribute a lot.
So it's been mainly your doing.
Yeah.
In this day and age, that's pretty impressive.
I only work through the summer and just save my money for the coming
for the
semester.
Fall. What is tuition now?
I think it's $1,300 a semester.
Wow. And that's not room and board, that's just tuition.
Right, just tuition.
What about, you're going to be paying back loans for a long time now?
Yeah.
You've taken them out for their 4 years. I don't want to get into numbers or anything like that, but you will be paying a significant amount. When do they start coming due?
Well, I've used up my grace period because I took some time off school. I took a semester off, and you normally would get a 6 to 9 month grace period depending on what type of loan you have. But I'll be paying in June because I've used my
And that'll continue for a long time.
Yeah.
We'll get on to jobs and things later on in the interview. We don't want to get into too much of this at once. Yeah, later on in life as well. What about the cost of higher education? I mean, is it something that is still affordable? You read about these tuition raises. Are people going to be able to continue to afford? People like you, I'm talking about, who don't have real wealthy parents who can just send you through anything. Are you going to be able to continue going to college, do you think? Is it still possible to do it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, it's raising every year, so it's getting more difficult. But for me personally, financial aid has helped a lot, I guess, for the position that I'm in. But, and especially, I think the UW is a very affordable school to go to. Going out of state would be more difficult for me, probably impossible. I probably wouldn't do something like that. But I don't know, it seems like becoming more essential to go to college than higher education.
Well, you know, I'm hearing stories about people who, like you, go through undergraduate, and then they go to graduate school, and they accumulate another, you know, and they come out of graduate school owing $30,000 or something like that, and payable on demand almost. Can that continue? How much can you be in debt, and especially with the job market the way it is, before things start suffering?
I don't know.
How are your friends managing? Are they doing okay, generally?
Yeah, generally most of my friends are doing okay. I don't have too many that have actually graduated yet. But I know I'm not going to be going on to graduate school for a couple of years anyway, because of, for one, financial reasons, and I just like to, you know, get up a savings before I put myself so in debt. But I don't know. It seems to be so common for people to be in debt from school, and no one's really fretting about it.
It's sort of becoming like part of a stage of life at this point.
Basically, it's
you go through puberty and then you go through debt.
I'm not sure how I'm going to deal with it. It doesn't scare me yet, I guess. Maybe I'm not being so realistic about it until I actually do.
Yeah, until you get in
and see what the job market is.
Maybe when you come back to Madison in 4 years, we can do another interview on your debts.
You find me on the street somewhere.
I'll always put a quarter in your cup. Don't worry. Now we've talked a little bit about your jobs over the years. You were working for the Oral History Project, obviously, from your freshman year, which is how I got to know you. And then you went to the Dells that summer, and you worked at Tommy Bartlett's World.
Well, not Tommy Bartlett, actually.
Noah's Ark or something.
Noah's Ark.
That was it.
So I think Tommy Bartlett owns half of Wisconsin Dells, and then the Watermans who own Noah's Ark under him.
Was it a nice summer?
Did you enjoy it? It was a wonderful summer. Mm-hmm. Being outside and playing on slides every day, pushing kids down slides.
A lot of college kids there?
Working?
Yeah.
Everyone just about my age, so it was just like being at summer camp.
What were some of your other jobs on campus and in summers? I know you've had some interesting summer employment.
On campus, when I left, the Oral History Project, of course.
You can start.
I went to the archives, of course, and I worked there for about a year. And then during the summer, I moved to D.C. for a summer, and I got a chance to work in the Smithsonian.
Let's talk about that for just a minute. How did you move to made you decide to move to D.C.?
I have a roommate whose parents live there, and I went to live with her and her parents so that we could save money because we were planning a trip to Europe.
And yes, so, I remember you talking about that.
So I wanted to, we had a free place to live for the summer, which is good. We could save money. So I went to D.C. and got a job in the Smithsonian.
What did you do in the Smithsonian?
Well, there I sold audio tours of the museum, so I worked at the information desk. It was just a very important job for the Smithsonian, but just, you know, public interaction.
Yeah. Well, working in an institution that must have been
it really was.
Very interesting. Did you get to know the Smithsonian at all?
I would go on tours every day that I was there. Well, I actually only worked part-time there. My other job was waitressing. So I made a little more money that way.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, let's see, went to Europe, didn't work for 3 months, of course, and came back, and now I'm working at in the sociology department for a survey on American families, Department of Demography.
And you enjoy that?
Yeah.
Are you scoring the surveys or
we're
giving them?
We're actually dealing with the organizing the information and the data. It's a lot of computer work. It's all been done, and so we're just in control. If problems arise, it was a survey done 5 years ago, and then there's a follow-up done now, and so we have to make sure that the data, you get family rosters, and we make sure that the data makes sense, so we figure out problems.
And do you work directly with the professor on that?
There's, not directly, no.
You work with an RA or a...
Another woman has... I work with her. She just graduated a year ago, and she's sort of in charge of our office. another worker.
Going back to Europe for a second, was that did you enjoy that experience?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What were the countries that you visited?
Well, we landed in England. We didn't stay there long because it was very expensive in the north and the west of Europe, and we were on a budget, student budget. So we traveled to the east mainly. We went through Czechoslovakia and Hungary and Turkey. We spent about a month in. And Holland, we went back up north. We went to Spain and Portugal and Morocco.
Oh, my. Did you like Morocco?
Oh, it was interesting. Yeah. It was terrifying.
In what sense? Just because it was so different?
You see just a lot of men out in cloaks, and they don't take too kindly to Western women, I guess, particularly. We were with a group of people that I just didn't feel very comfortable. But
there were there any incidents?
No, not really, just scare tactics. I've heard other stories, but nothing really bad ever happened to us. So it was interesting more than it was frightening. I mean, we'll do it again. So.
Well, do you have any other remarks about your trip or Morocco in particular?
Well, Morocco in particular, I had a friend who traveled there, and she was walking down the street with her boyfriend, and a Moroccan asked her boyfriend if he could trade his girlfriend for a camel.
Well, on that note, I think we could leave.
Well,
yeah, probably. So we leave that interesting world. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, and I think I do, you lived in Whitty Hall, was it, in your freshman year?
Yes.
Let's switch to room and board for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Reflect on that for a moment. Did you enjoy that experience? Tell me about it.
Looking back on it, I think I enjoyed it more than when I was actually living there.
How so?
I just realized that it was a good opportunity to meet people, you know, different people from everywhere, and you can make friends that you would, you know, it's good to know people in this large university and have people that are familiar. So in that sense, just being with people is.
Have you maintained any of those friendships from that freshman year?
Just a few of them, actually, not very many, just a handful. But I would see them on the street and obviously go up and talk to them. And, that's always good.
You left, now I'm working on faulty memory here. You moved to Mifflin Street, was
right,
that it?
That's right.
Okay. How did that, the last time I really talked to you about this, you were excited about moving in there. You're going to be right where near the block party was held every year. Tell me about your experiences as a student on Mifflin Street in 1991, that would be probably.
Okay. Yes. It actually didn't turn out so well.
Oh.
After we were there, we had 9 girls living in the house with us, and so it was a bit chaotic.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
At times. And also, we didn't have the best landlord when we were there. It's that area of student housing tends to house a lot of younger students, you know, people just probably moving out of the dorms, perhaps not so aware of what goes on in landlord-tenant relationships and rights that you have and should be aware of. And so I think we were a bit naive when we were moving in, and it ended up that we took our landlord to court, actually, for at the end of the year. I guess it was basically because she withheld our security deposit for no good reason, and she didn't. You're supposed to detail things that are wrong or in not as good of shape when you moved in and things like that. And we really thought she was wrong about that. And so we went to the student tenant union, which is very helpful. Every student that's a beginning renter should go there. They have booklets that tell you your rights and things like that. And they also hold records of complaints filed against landlords in town. So
that's good. Is that a public?
Oh yeah, it's right on campus. Okay. It's,
I mean, those books about landlord complaints is
a
public book.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go in there and look.
Yeah, one of my other roommates actually went in and did it, so I don't know how the setup is, but I know that she saw her landlord's complaint stack about a foot high.
Interesting.
So she had a reputation, and so she'd been to court before. It would have been helpful had we known this before we moved in. And that's what they recommend doing, is check out your landlord even before you move in, which is good. But a year and a half later, we ended up winning the court case.
Oh, my.
It took this long to go through everything. And it just kept getting delayed. And, of course, then everyone moved away, and it was hard to get in contact with everyone. And
did you get your refund, though?
We did. Yeah. Then, so.
Did you have to hire a lawyer, or did you kind of represent yourself in that?
We had a lawyer, actually.
Were that you said that you would recommend that everyone does this, and you were naive when you moved in there. Were there any other areas of tenant landlord problems that any other problems you had in that year?
There are certain. With me personally.
With your group, with your.
Oh, not after that. No, I
mean, for the course of the year, was that the main problem you had? Was the
throughout the year, she wasn't exactly the best landlord. I don't know. Yeah, we'd had little problems here and there. In fact, we didn't have a bathroom for a few months.
I'd say that's a little problem with nine people.
Leaking into the basement, and the thing, we probably shouldn't have moved into a place like that. But you're thinking at that stage that you want to live with your friends, you want a cheap place to live, and you feel like you can put up with things like that.
Yeah.
But then you realize it's not so good.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, other than the legal aspects of it, it was fun. It was a fun time, the black party and all.
How was the Mifflin Street party that year?
Oh, it was really good. We had people hanging off our rope and stuff. And I was there they had it just a couple weekends ago, I guess, the annual Black Street party, and I went back. And on the house that we lived in, the people who live there have a band, I guess, and they ripped off the porch to make a stage for themselves. I'm curious to know how she's going to look like that.
I wonder if they'll get their security deposit back.
But, yeah, it's pretty wild still.
Where'd you go after that? What were some of the... You left the nine girls, and...
Then we moved to... Okay, that was West Mifflin. Then we moved to East Mifflin. on the east side of town, so... There were four of us who lived there, and there were no problems there. It was a good place to live.
You knew a little bit more about how to look for places at that point.
I think so.
And then you lived at Williamson this last year.
Yeah.
And the same thing, pretty satisfactory.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably not an atypical evolution that students go through, from the dorm to kind of the loud, crowded party type atmosphere, and then you start getting more serious, and
you get farther away from campus.
Another 5 years, you'd be living in Sun Prairie. That's great. Okay, let's see. We talked about landlord. What about clubs and organizations? Have you belonged to many during your period here? Any? Many?
Not very many at all. But I was involved in Wisburg for a while.
Now that's.
I don't know if I talked about that my freshman year.
I don't think so. No. I didn't see it on the summary.
But I was in that for a while, and that's an organization that Wisconsin, I forget exactly what it means now, Product Information Research Group. Do you know exactly?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I know it's a research group of some kind. And they work on environmental issues and recycling and getting campaigns organized for... consumer rights and things like that. And one thing that we did for it was we took a field trip to Washington, D.C., and that was my first time to D.C. before I actually lived there. And we got to see Ralph Nader speak.
Oh, that must have been interesting.
Yeah, we took a van up there. About 13 of us from Wisconsin to D.C. And then we just attended conferences on how to implement campaigns as far as getting... lobbying or getting policies and things like that. So
how did that reflect? What was your actual? This was a volunteer thing, right?
Yeah, anyone could.
What were your jobs here as a volunteer? What did you do in Madison?
Well, the one big project that I worked on then was a recycling project, getting students more aware of. We did posters or something, and getting recycling bins put up more. There's a lot more now than there were then. Wisburg has a part of doing things like that. And that was one thing that I worked on.
Is it still in existence, Wisburg?
Oh, yeah. It's still in existence. But I'm not in it anymore, so I'm not even sure what they're working on.
That's interesting. Any other clubs, organizations?
I wasn't. No, I went to a Hoofers meeting once, but it just worked out that I could never go to their events. They mm-hmm. were at times that I just couldn't go, so I really didn't get too involved with them. I went to one meeting, though. And it's a good thing for doing outdoors activities. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. A lot of students yeah. I know do it, but they just didn't have enough time, I guess,
yeah.
for
well,
recreation.
Yeah. There's only so many hours, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And also, you're working 15 hours a week. Let's not forget about that, too. We have a couple of student publications that come out every day, the Cardinal and the Herald. I remember you saying that you did read those in your freshman year. Have you read them through pretty regularly?
I read them, yeah. I pick them up.
Anything to say about either one of them? You know, you're almost a journalism major, an English major, talking about writing. How would you talk about these publications, the quality of them, and...
I can't say that I've paid too much attention as far as the political bent to either one of them, but maybe the Cardinal. Actually, I heard someone saying on the street the other day that the Cardinal was going out of publication. It could be.
Oh, I can't believe
rumor.
That.
I
yeah,
I.
No, well, let's get the rumors. You heard it first here, ladies and gentlemen. I hadn't heard anything, but that's a. You hear that periodically, that there's financial problems, but you know, this thing's been going on since 1890-something, or 89, I think it was, actually.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it would be.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what I would observe the differences to be
Okay, let's talk about leisure time. What about, how much time do you have, and how much leisure time do you have, and what do you usually do with it?
I don't let myself have a lot of leisure time during the week, of course. I generally spend my time studying at night, and so guilt overtakes me. And then I like to go to movies, I guess. There's a lot of theaters in my town. Going to bars since I've become of age, I guess, has been a thing. Seeing local bands. And
What are the bars that people, that students go to a lot, or that the students you hang out with go to a lot?
Club to Wash over in East Washington mm-hmm. is a popular place for a lot of bands to go. The Plaza on State Street mm-hmm. is a pretty popular place. Let's see. Around the square, the Capitol Square, the Pinckney Street Hideaway is mm-hmm. the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just near my end of town. And there's really a lot of places. The Essen House is kind of a fun place.
Is that where you drink the beer out of the boot or something?
Out of the boots, yeah. range of ages groups that go there, students and families and things, but that's fun. Polka bands.
Yeah.
So a variety of things I like, not any one particular,
okay.
I guess.
Is there any Madison band that's really big now that people like to see?
I'm not sure. There really are a lot of them, and I've seen a lot of them that I don't care for,
mm-hmm.
but... I like Weaker Youth Ensemble. It's a ska band.
Ska?
Ska type of music. It's kind of fast. And
okay.
I never knew what it was, actually, before I came to Madison either. So it's
just kind of a fast... Band. Is it rock and roll? Or?
It's not rock and roll, really. It's like they have horns.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's really fast.
Well, that's probably pretty accurate.
Booty Fruit is another name that comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we like to hear this because, you know, these change over time and the places change, and it's nice to get opinions on these.
It might be interesting to put these on tape, but some names of people that I know that are in bands, Drug-Induced Nightmare. These names will be good to keep for
okay. Drug-Induced, yeah.
Drug-Induced Nightmare.
Well, that's a very interesting name and one that I've certainly never heard before. And
yes.
Drug-Induced Nightmare.
Right. Well, I'm not a big follower, but I know about anyway.
Do you spend much time at Memorial Union?
Yeah, I do, actually. Mainly during the day. I go there and get my union mug filled up with coffee.
There you go, your red mug.
Right.
Now, did that start while you were in college? Let's talk about that for a second.
The union mug?
Yeah, which you were drinking out of right here.
Yes, I have my lemonade in it. Yes, it just started, I think, maybe the year that I first came here, maybe? Freshman?
Could be. It's about it's that old. But it started while you were here, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just the last 4 years, I think.
So, yeah.
And you pay a flat fee for the mug,
mm-hmm.
is that it?
Yeah.
And then refills are discounted?
Mm-hmm. Hot and cold beverages, sorry, no beer, are available at a discount when you present this cup at any Wisconsin Union restaurant.
There you go. Is that your original cup?
No, in fact, I took my original cup to Europe with me, and I lost it somewhere along the way. So Kittleson mug from Wisconsin Union is floating around somewhere. The Caribbean, perhaps.
Well, we talked a little bit about the music, the local music. What about the major groups that students are listening to, the national groups? Who does that include?
I guess I can't really speak generally because I'm not a big follower of music in general, really. I mean, we listen to the radio, but I really like the Indigo Girls.
Mm.
I think they're pretty current. And good. And then there's pop bands that, like I said, I don't really follow, but I listen to, like, Pearl Jam is really big right now, Nirvana, I guess, with Kurt Cobain. Just committed suicide.
Oh, the grunge music.
The grunge scene, yeah, is I guess, what's the most popular these days.
How would you define grunge music?
It's kind of heavy and depressing.
Oh. It's the kind you would expect someone to play who commits a suicide.
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. It's played in, like I said, started out of Seattle in basement bars and smoky places. And
why do people like it generally?
Maybe we have a depressive generation.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, heavy and depressive, does that sound like the kind of thing you'd want to listen to on a Friday night?
It's really, you know, no, I don't really understand why. Maybe it's not even my age group scene. Maybe it's younger. Maybe it starts younger. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why they've made such a...
Well, grunge, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert on this, but it moved across the country rather quickly, didn't it? It started in Seattle and it just caught on everywhere.
So, yeah.
Is there kind of like a movement here in Madison or, you know, groups devoted to that? And...
I guess so, yeah. See, that's what a lot of the local bands sound like to me when you go listen to them in the bars. They're real. Not really a distinctive style other than a lot of guitars and drums and just, you know,
very heavy.
I'm not a big music critic. Yeah. I can't exactly explain it, but it's just not the most uplifting music at all.
That's one way of describing it. When did grunge come about?
When?
How long did Kurt Cobain, has he been around?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I wasn't really familiar with him. One of my roommates from last year was a follower. So they've maybe only been around for 5 years or so.
Is that one of the current
big?
That's one of the current big fads then, is the grunge.
Definitely
kind of music. Is there anything else that you can characterize as easily as grunge that's popular now on the music scenes, yeah.
Blind Melon, maybe?
What's that? Is that another...
That's the name of a band.
No, I meant are there other genres? Types of music that can be defined like grunge.
Right, it's so big.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't really know.
What about Indigo Girls? You mentioned them as your favorite. What kind of music do they play?
It's acoustic rock, basically. Hmm. They do. I like the acoustic sound myself. Hmm. You know, I actually can hear the music and the words. It sounds like I'm pretty old. I also hear my mother in me more and more every day.
Wait a few years.
Is
the acoustic rock, is that something that maybe the juniors and seniors would listen to more than you'd hear it in the dorms, for example?
Maybe, yeah.
Has your own taste evolved?
Hip-hop, I guess, is pretty popular.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, hip-hop. Let's talk about that. Yeah.
It's not something that I'm really into, but dance music is obviously very popular.
Yeah.
Go to Rock Island and you'll get hip-hop dancing, rap music, and things like that.
Do you like rap?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I like it, but I don't listen to a lot of it.
Okay. How have your musical tastes evolved? Have you experienced an evolution in your years at college?
Yeah, I think so. I've gotten more into music like jazz music. I like more than I would have liked maybe when I was a freshman and things like that. I listen to a lot of classical. When I'm studying and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I generally go across the board. I like just doing mm-hmm. everything.
Okay. Let's move to something totally different, religion. We're under the rubric of leisure time here. Did you go to church much? Were you very religious before you came to Madison?
Before I came to Madison, I went to church regularly every Sunday.
And what about since?
Well, my freshman year, I sort of kept that up for mm-hmm. a while. I'd go to church. But then, after that, I guess my sophomore year, I just stopped going, rethinking the whole religion.
Okay, let's talk about that briefly. Yeah.
That happens with people when they're in college. It wasn't a very strong upbringing. I was Catholic. My family was fairly religious, but not so much that I was frightened from leaving mm-hmm. it. You know, mm-hmm. so I just got to thinking about all the different kinds of religions in the world, I guess. In the classes I've taken, it really opens your eyes to mm-hmm. those different ways of living, and then obviously traveling and seeing so many different options. I just didn't have such a strong belief, and especially in Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're a Catholic,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of pulled away from that. I go with my family still when I'm home mm-hmm. for holidays. Christmas and Easter, it's not strong enough that I would not go, but I don't practice it on my own.
When we did this interview when you were freshman, I think I might have even asked you what was your religion, and you said Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you that same question today. What is your religion? And I'm curious what your answer will be.
This is kind of a hard subject for me, I guess, but I would still say Catholic, because that's my family.
Mm-hmm.
Although I feel not very true about saying mm-hmm. that at the same time.
Are you more skeptical about the whole religious experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say. Especially a lot of the Catholic views to me just seem not in tune with my own views. They're more very conservative and mm-hmm. views on birth control, for instance, and women practitioners' views towards women and things like
mm-hmm.
that. But, and the whole idea of worship in general, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Organized religion,
organized
in
religion.
Other words. Is this an issue that you thought about by yourself, or did you talk over with friends, or a combination of that? Or?
I guess it was a result of just talking with people who share different views. And, you know, I have a couple of roommates who are atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Just being, I never would have met anyone like that in Menominee
mm-hmm.
or in my family, you know? And
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't absolutely cause me to divorce myself from my religion, but it just makes me think of, it makes me question why or what I'm doing in my religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rethink it, and then I realize that it's maybe not something that I really believe in.
You sort of answered this a minute ago, and just one more question, then we'll leave this topic. If you had stayed in Menominee, do you think that you'd be feeling the way you feel right now? In other words, has the university been partly responsible for this?
Oh, I definitely think so. The university, and just exposure to so many different other viewpoints and peoples and backgrounds. You don't get that in Menominee
yeah.
as much, I should
okay.
say.
Moving right along, politics. Is there a way you can characterize the political climate on campus during your years here?
Well, let's see. I can just address student government, I guess.
Okay.
So one thing that
let's start there.
You've heard that they it sort of dissolved for a while.
Oh yes, that's yeah.
Gone, but now I think because they've elected people in or come back. I haven't really been too involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the student government doesn't affect me, and so I sort of don't.
Well, you're a student.
Yeah.
And it doesn't affect you, so is that a critique of it?
I don't know what they do, actually. And
I'd say that's a critique of
yeah.
it.
I don't see much of a need for it, personally, but maybe that's because maybe they've done a good job. And
you just don't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just don't know that. I really don't follow it too much. Mm-hmm. Very involved politically.
What about national politics? Do you follow that much?
Not too much. I actually wasn't here for election. I was overseas, but yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm very involved politically. I take a pretty independent stand. And
well, there are issues that I'm going to sort of catalog as political issues, for maybe lack of a better term, that have been discussed a lot on campus, like multiculturalism. Is that, do you talk about that much?
Yeah, that comes up a lot, I think, at the university. In the breadth requirement, they have an ethnic studies requirement. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one way of addressing it, I guess, and making people more aware. They have a multicultural center in the union for students, and I think everyone's pretty aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Did you take the ethnic studies course?
Oh, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. What was that? Ethnicities in the U.S., I think, something like that. But I actually had taken a lot of them through anthropology.
That's true. That's about what anthropology is multiculturalism, cultural anthropology, at least. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're pretty concerned with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the concern is about right, not enough, too much?
I guess it seems about right to me.
What about, let's talk one second. Vicariously. So, let's talk about drugs and alcohol for a couple of minutes. This is another area that has, at least the alcohol part, has been with students for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
What about alcohol? Is beer still the drink of choice?
Oh, yes. I was just going to say that. Drink of choice, definitely. I think just students drink a lot of beer.
Yeah.
Is
that
Wisconsin, especially.
There have been some things over the course of the last few years, I'm sure you've heard about night patrols of police down on Langdon Street, and the Dean of Students' Office being very concerned with the drinking, underage drinking, and drinking in general at campus. Do you see it as you've been right in the trenches, you've been in the bars and all those parties and all those places. Do you see it as a problem?
I'm not sure that I see it as much of a problem, although I do know that there are there's a lot of underage drinking that goes on, and ID, fake IDs, you see that. I don't know if it's more of a problem than before, or it just seems, yes, it's definitely very prevalent, but it just seems to be such a big part of socializing, which is perhaps unfortunate.
Do you go to more or less parties and things as you've gone along in school?
Less, really.
Yeah, because I remember you talking about a lot of those fraternity parties where somebody swallowed goldfish or something like that.
Yeah, that was the last one I ever went to. But no, I never really did that much. I didn't really go to many house parties. We threw some of our own, I guess, on special occasions. We'd throw Christmas cocktail parties.
So this is something that more or less diminishes a little bit, in your case at least.
I would think so. Yeah. I think kids.
Kids. Boy, you are starting to sound like your mother.
The first come to college are really excited about just so many different people here and getting to meet these people. And so going to parties is a good way to get in and drinking. And so I think it's a lot more popular. But then once you get older, of course, the novelty wears off because you're allowed to drink for one thing. And I don't know.
And the novel, like you said, the novelty wears off.
Right.
Let's turn to drugs. Now, that's something, when I interview students from the 40s and 50s, and I ask them about drugs, they just say, are you kidding? That would just be something that was unheard of at that point in time. Yeah. However, it's certainly not unheard of today. And tell me a little bit about the drug scene, and I'm talking about among students, undergraduates, that you've been able to observe.
Yeah. Well, I myself am not much part of drugs in general, but I know that marijuana is probably the most prevalent that you see around, and I don't really know much about other.
So there's not much crack or all that kind of stuff?
I would imagine it goes on, but like I said, I'm not very familiar with it, so. But
So that marijuana might be the drug of choice. It was still pretty much the drug of choice.
I think so. Yeah. You can walk down the street and smell it pretty much. Especially in Mifflin.
Especially, I bet you got to know that smell pretty well by the time you were done.
And I'll just say something here about smoking, too.
Sure. Oh, yes. Okay. That's good.
There's a ban at the union. Now they don't smoke at the union anymore, of course.
Well, let's get this on tape. People 50 years from now might not know this, and that just came out this year.
Because when I was a freshman, and throughout sophomore, junior year, even going into the union, everyone was smoking. And but now they don't. They've banned that, and from a lot of restaurants around town, so smoking is sort of taking a hit. I think it's still really popular, but it's being more shunned in society, I think.
Do you agree with the ban on the union?
I do, because I'm not a smoker, and I think that I didn't like going in there and coming out and smelling like Marlboro.
Okay. What about AIDS? Is that still a big concern? Is that
it's definitely a big concern, more and more. So I think, I know more people who know people, and I also know people who have AIDS. Mm-hmm. Whereas a few years ago, I wouldn't have been able to say that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
It's definitely a rising problem. People are concerned. I have friends who are into going to high schools and talking about AIDS. One of my friends organized a talk to bring it to the high school and make people aware of safe sex.
Do students listen? High school students listen?
I'm not sure. I think it's more of a problem. It needs to be more of a problem, promiscuousness at a younger age. But at the same time, I also was reading an article in the State Journal, I think, about a group of 12-year-old girls out east somewhere who they were a group of virgins or something. I mean, 12, I know, is young, but they were into abstinence for, that was their club or something.
It's an interesting comment that 12-year-old girls would have an abstinence club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you'd think that'd just be natural.
Yeah.
But they make a point of, so that's encouraging, I guess.
Yeah, you wonder if there won't be a bigger movement in that direction.
Yeah.
This is Barry Tyker in They Read Jim. It's still May 17th, 1994, and I am still interviewing Amy Kittleson. And we're going to continue now, Amy, with athletics. Mm-hmm. Briefly, discuss your involvement with, as a fan or whatever, with athletics and your years here at UW.
Okay, I don't follow sports all that closely. I've been to one volleyball game. I played volleyball in high school, so I wanted to see that. And I've been to a basketball game and a few football games, but I don't make it a habit of attending sports. I'm not generally into the whole idea of sports in general, as far as on a larger scale outside of college, the disproportion of how much athletes are paid in relation to other things that I think the money could go towards. So I really don't get into it that much, but so I did watch the Rose Bowl.
It sounds, before we get to the Rose Bowl, it sounds like you're almost not anti-athletic, but that you have questions about its place in society.
I do. I mean, I think it's a healthy, certainly. I played sports all through high school, more for the fun and the social aspect of it, and outside, not competition and money, which, obviously competition is part of it, but the money part of it bothers me a lot when you get into pro athletics.
Yes, we had a very unusual circumstance happen this New Year's Day. The University of Wisconsin actually made it to the Rose Bowl for the first time in your lifetime, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think,
19th, when were you born?
71.
Oh, yes.
That was what?
62 was, 34 was the last one, something like that. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the Rose Bowl. How did you see it? And let's get a little bit of this on tape.
I saw it at some friend's house. It was New Year's Day, I guess, right?
Yes. Yep, New Year's Day.
New Year's Day. We just at some friend's house, just 4 or 5 of us there, a small party. We were watching it, and it was the only time I'd seen the football team play all year, so I guess that was the one to catch. I think I didn't know they were going to the Rose Bowl until a couple of weeks before something, but I know. I was kind of oblivious to that, but no, it was pretty exciting.
Did people yell and scream at the place you were at?
Well, like I said, there were only five of us, and none of us are that avid football fans, but we somehow needed to watch it that day. So, but, and I wasn't downtown afterwards, so I don't know exactly what the hype was.
You did get to hear On Wisconsin on national television.
All the Californians were eating sushi.
We were talking just a little bit more about the Rose Bowl and the excitement it brought on campus. We had another very unfortunate event occur this year for historians of the future who might be listening to this tape, and that occurred after the Michigan game, wasn't it,
I believe? Oh, the stampede.
Where there was a stampede, a push down from the top of the student section down to the bottom, in which several students were very seriously injured. Mm-hmm. They were pushed right through the metal retaining fence, and several football players came out and saved a few lives, I believe. Did you talk about this with your friends?
We talked about it.
Did you know anyone directly or indirectly?
No, who was there? I didn't know anyone who was at the game. But I guess the reason why it happened, it came out later, was there too many tickets were sold to the game, and so there was, they wanted heavier regulations on ticket selling, and there was a whole...
Well, I think what it was is there weren't too many sold, but they were being passed back. I'm not sure of that. I'd have to check, but students were getting in, and then they were passing them out to students who didn't have them, and you could get in on the same ticket.
Okay, so
I
that was it.
Because that would be easier to do than to sell too many tickets. But
That's probably... No, that could be it. I'm not really sure. It was kind of vague in my mind as to why it happened, but yeah, it was a big event.
Not much to it. I read a sporting publication this year, and they said they gave out awards for the year, and they said the best students are from the University of Wisconsin because of their Rose Bowl behavior, and the worst students are from the University of Wisconsin and the nation this was because of their behavior at the Michigan game. Okay, let's leave athletics.
Okay.
Let's talk about discrimination versus inclusion for a moment. As a woman, have you ever been discriminated against, to your knowledge, here at the university?
No, I haven't really, that I've felt.
Were you felt because of your gender or whatever in your classes or anything like that?
I honestly can't say that it ever made me angry enough to... that's a bad way of putting it, because I don't even feel like I've experienced it.
Well, that's fine. Any of your friends, any people you know, have they...
Not that I really know of. I can't think of any stories of that ever happening. But I just want to bring up one thing.
Sure.
There was, this doesn't have to do with me being a woman or sexism, that kind of discrimination. I'm not even sure that it's directly discrimination, but there was a cartoon run in the Badger Herald a while ago with something to do with, the cartoonist's strip was meant to say how... they're trying to get away from having mascots being Indians or, Native Americans being derogatory and things like that. And his strip had a little black Sambo character in it as a mascot for one of the teams. But his point was that how absurd it is to have, a stereotype representation being a mascot and that type of thing. And there's a whole sort of uproar from, black students on campus is it being racist. And I didn't really understand how it was being racist, but I know that there was a big controversy with that.
Well, we've had the whole free speech movement. I had taken that strip as satire myself.
Yeah, that's how I took it too.
And it's interesting that people perceived it in such different
ways.
Yeah,
it really caused a lot of
And it opens up a very interesting question. What about the whole question of free speech? Has that been an issue that you've talked about with your friends or thought about yourself during these years?
Yeah, the whole hate speech movement, I guess, and should that be or shouldn't it be?
Okay, well, let's get back to hate speech for just a moment.
Well, I can really see both issues of the hate speech.
Both sides
of the hate speech issues. But I think it's good on one hand to, you know, not restrict it. Let it out. You know, if people are speaking their prejudices, then it's there to deal with. And I guess then you know it exists, so it's not, you know, it's not being secretly dealt with where you might end up with things like the KKK, for instance. I mean, that's very historical, but who's to say that's not going to creep up again if you keep
pushing it underground?
Right, yeah. And just if you restrict hate speech. And then it will come out, I think, in more violent or more damaging ways than if you allow it to come out. And then I think that it would be better. It's more healthy, healthier.
So that you would probably agree with that? With the,
I guess I would, and yeah, talking more, about it just now, I think I would.
Okay. Was this an issue that that students discussed? Did you talk about this at the dinner table with your roommates and your friends?
Yeah, I guess we would talk about, about things like this. Trying to make ourselves more socially aware and conscious, and just, you know, discussion is definitely a good way to know what all sides of what's going on. And
on a more general level, did you experience, did you hear about or have knowledge of discrimination directed against women on campus?
I really can't say that I have. None of my friends that I can think of directly have ever come to me and said that they feel like they've been discriminated against.
What about anti-Semitism? Have you ever heard anybody talk about that? Or aware of any of that?
Not too much, really. To say the truth.
What about blacks or other minorities?
Nor that. I have friends in all of those areas, some black friends, some Jewish friends, and so I guess people who would be around me wouldn't talk about things like that, so that's good.
That is good. Let's switch from discrimination versus inclusion to campus personalities. Did you ever have any contact with the Dean of Students, Mary Rouse?
Oh, I saw her up in Bascom Hall. I've never actually spoken to her.
You passed by her?
Yeah, I've seen her walking on the streets. Yeah, I didn't go into her office. I saw her standing in the dome back when Donna Shalala was still around.
What about Donna Shalala? Did you ever have... Chancellor Ward is just getting started, so it's hard to say much about him. But Chancellor Shalala was around for several years while you were an undergraduate. Was she a figure who was talked about? What were the student attitudes toward her?
Yeah, I think she had quite an impact, actually. She was talked about a lot. I think the impression that I got was, well, of course, every big personality on campus will get a little bit of both sides, you know, those who don't like Shalala, those who do. But I would have to say that I think she did a lot of good while she was here. She seemed to be into, you know, this multicultural issue for one thing, and I think she was good at addressing student life directly. I thought she was favorably viewed.
For the undergrad, toward the undergraduate?
I think so.
What were some of the criticisms? Did you remember, do you recall hearing any of them?
Oh, I don't know if I can pinpoint exactly what they were.
Okay. No, just curious if any came to mind. Any other campus personalities you can think about who should be mentioned?
I can't really think of any. No.
Okay. No preachers, no mall preachers.
Scanner Dan people.
Talk about Scanner Dan for a moment. Everybody knows.
Everyone.
50 years from now, no one's going to know about Scanner Dan. No. Tell me a bit about him.
All I know is that he seems to know a lot of people on campus. He walks around. He has a scanner at his side. And he is into subliminal messages, I think. I see people testing him if they walk by and be saying something to their friend, and then he likes to pick up on that as if you're talking to him, and he'll shout out things. I really don't know what...
He's a strange person.
Yeah, there's a lot of personalities like that, I guess, Ren. Yeah.
What about street people? That's become an issue in the years you've been on campus. Have you seen an increase in the number of street people?
I don't know if I've seen an increase, but I've definitely seen the same ones through the entire time I've been here. They're regulars that seem to live on the street. That I don't know if there's been an increase. I can't say that I've really...
Do you see it as a problem at all, or is that just part of the urban landscape?
See, to me, I'm not sure how I can generalize because I haven't lived that in many urban places other than here, you know.
Are they a problem to you? Do you ever have a problem with them directly or indirectly?
No, I've only been approached a few times by some of them, and they'll be talking about something. Never any harm or anything, if that's what you mean. But I don't think that it's. I mean, it's sad to see them there. You know, I don't like to, and it. But they seem to almost like being around the students, some of them. You know, Skinner Dan, for instance, has made friends with many of them, so.
Let's go on to a more, to a different topic, which is a little bit painful, too, probably, and that's called the job market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned that you had a job for this summer. Could
yes.
you talk about that for a moment, please?
Okay, I'm moving to Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming to... I'm avoiding the job market. I'm going to be working as a waitress in a lodge all summer. So I'm not really getting into the job market right away. I'm putting that off for a while.
Okay. The summer is going to end, and Yellowstone is going to become another one of your very pleasant memories.
Right.
I certainly hope so.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do have the reality of the job market facing you. What are your plans
that? Tentative plans are to move to Portland, Oregon with a girlfriend of mine from here. And again, I don't really have anything lined up because my plans, immediate plans, are sort of to do some traveling. I'd like to do some more traveling since I've gone once. I kind of like to go back again. So I don't want to get locked into anything right now. And I'm not going to be serious about going to graduate school for a few years or even getting a job, maybe doing temp work, you know, just jobs here and there, I think, to get by for now, at least the next few years, is my plan. But
so it's going to be kind of what you've been doing, except the school won't be there, the jobs will be there instead.
Right.
Because you've been doing a lot of summertime interesting things.
Yeah, so I guess.
Washington and Europe. And
yeah, the sampling bug has bit me.
The sampling bug has bit you. You've mentioned twice in this interview graduate school. What are you considering along those lines?
I haven't really even thought of it. I'm not sure if I would go into English for graduate school because I don't have any plans right now in my head for going on to teaching, or I guess that's what I would do if I went to graduate school in English, maybe. But I'm actually thinking of maybe getting into law somewhere down the line.
You've taken a law. Which course?
I took anthropology of law. So, and that was really interesting. I did a study of the Zuni law. So, not your corporate lawyer or business or anything, but you know, starting sort of grassroots. Maybe something like that along the line.
I should have asked this question a little earlier, but let's go back to it for just a moment. There's a phrase that's become very popular in the press. Over the last 6 months to a year, and it's called Generation X, which is being used to describe this current generation, of which you are becoming a senior spokesperson, I guess. I think that it mainly means high school and college students together. Tell me what you mean, what that term Generation X means to you.
Okay, well, first we'll start off technically.
Okay.
I read this somewhere that the reason Generation X, well, it's twofold, actually. So the technical reason is that we're supposedly the 10th generation in this century. Oh. So X, Roman numeral for 10. It's an interesting little tidbit that I read. But on a more interpretive level, it means basically, from what I gather from media, is that we're lost and fragmented and identityless. Things like this, which is kind of discouraging, and I guess that ties back into grunge.
Do you feel that fits you? I mean,
I think to a certain extent it does, just because, I mean, of how I'm sort of gearing my life after college.
It's not a
directed.
Path. Yeah, it's sort of a scattered.
I'm not following a path. I'm sort of would like to create my own, and so I guess I do sort of fit into that.
No, when I was growing up, we all read Catcher in the Rye and all of these. Every generation has their struggle, you know, with their identity crisis and all that. What's different about the Generation X?
I think it has a lot to do with just what I've come up with on my own, is that we're living in a time where they talk about information overload and, you know, just so much information everywhere, and it's hard to sort of put it all together, or, you know, this is what I get in over so many people in the world, population. These things, I think, are really having an effect. Like,
okay, go ahead. You had another comment.
Okay, yeah, you were mentioned in here, Generation Catcher in the Rye, and I just wanted to mention some things that maybe summarize the X generation.
Okay.
Generation X.
Generation X. We don't know if the X precedes or follows generation.
So there was a movie made by a 23-year-old college student from California called Reality Bites. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that,
but
that's just all about the X generation, fragmented life, and the whole movie was her home videos of her friends and doing different things and sitting in your living room watching MTV, which is the epitome of Generation X, I think, assuming that we have nothing more than a 15-second attention span and that type of thing. And also a movie called Slacker, Dazed and Confused. These are two other ones that are the titles in themselves, sort of.
Yeah, that take that concept and
it really does. So right. So I just want to.
Oh no, that's excellent. Yeah, thank you very much. I should see Reality Bites. I believe it's still out.
Oh yeah.
And if I'd have known that it dealt with this concept, I probably would have seen it.
It's pertinent to my life, I think.
This question is going to be, I didn't have this one on the list, and I want to kind of not end the interview with it, but mm-hmm. we're getting right near the end now. Mm-hmm. How has college changed you? How are you different now than you were when you came here as a freshman from Menominee in 1990, or 89 actually, the fall of 89?
I think the biggest thing is kind of a general vague answer, but just being more aware of what else is out in the world, and traveling, seeing other lands and other people is the most amazing thing for me, to just be aware of how different things can work. And it's just, I guess it's just opened my mind a lot, which maybe sounds so cliche going to college, but it's so true. That's really just what it does. And it makes you see all the different possibilities of how you can, you know, put your life or where you can go with it. And different things you can do. It's just sort of made it. The world is my oyster. Maybe that doesn't fit. But.
Well, I think that's a pretty nice place to end the interview, actually. Do you have any other comments you'd like to make at this time?
No, I think we can end it there. That sounds about right.
The world is my oyster. And on that wonderful note, certainly not a Generation X grunge statement.
No, not at all. I'm going to change that.
We will end this interview.
Okay.